KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in False Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Akutan, Alaska.
It's time now for your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset. Starting with your coastal water forecast, courtesy of the National Weather Service of Anchorage, Alaska. From Sitkanap to Castle Cape, small craft advisory Tuesday. Today, west winds 20 knots, sea 7 feet. Tonight, west winds 20 knots, sea 6 feet. And Tuesday, northwest winds 25 knots, sea 6 feet. Castle Cape to Cape Tolstoy, small craft advisory through tonight. Today, west winds 25 knots, sea 6 feet. Tonight, southwest winds 25 knots, seas 5 feet. And Tuesday, west winds 20 knots, seas 5 feet. Cape Tolstoy to Cape Sarashef, gale warning through Tuesday. Today, southwest winds 35 knots, seas 13 feet with snow and rain. Tonight, west winds 40 knots, seas 15 feet with snow and rain. And Tuesday, west winds 35 knots, diminishing to 25 in the afternoon, seas 12 feet. Port Hyde and Nelson Lagoon, small craft advisory through Tuesday. Today, southwest winds 25 knots, seas 9 feet with snow. Tonight, southwest winds 20 knots, seas 9 feet with snow and rain. And Tuesday, west winds 15 knots, seas 9 feet with snow and rain. Nelson Lagoon to Cape Sarashef, gale warning tonight and Tuesday. Today, southwest winds 30 knots, seas 15 feet with snow and rain. Tonight, southwest winds 40 knots, seas 20 feet with snow and rain. And Tuesday, west winds 35 knots, diminishing to 25 in the afternoon, seas 17 feet with snow. Your detailed forecast for the Alaska Peninsula. Today, numerous snow showers. Snow accumulation can be up to 2 inches. Highs in the upper 30s. Southwest winds 10 to 20 miles per hour with gusts to 35. Tonight, snow and rain in the evening, then snow showers after midnight. Areas of blowing snow after midnight. Snow accumulation can be up to 7 inches. Lows in the upper 20s to mid 30s. West winds 15 to 30 miles per hour. And Tuesday, areas of blowing snow in the morning. Snow showers in the morning, then snow likely in the afternoon. Snow accumulation can be up to 5 inches. Highs in the upper 20s to upper 30s. West winds 10 to 25 miles per hour. Your tide predictions for the Popoff Island. There's a high tide at 1:45 a.m. at 5 feet 9 inches. A low at 6:52 at 3 feet 6 inches. A high at 12:37 p.m. at 6 feet 11 inches. And a low tonight at 7:38, a minus tide of 2 inches. Your sun rose at 9:09 this morning, and your sun will set at 8:36, giving us 11 hours and 29 minutes of daylight hours. And that was your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset here on KSDP and KAEB. I'm Amy Mack. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
Today on KUCB News, archaeologists have solved a bear mystery in the Aleutians, and the permanent fund may start running low on money without a major change. All of that and more coming up.
Local programming on KUCB is made possible by the Aleutian Housing Authority, providing affordable housing services in the Aleutian Pribilof Islands region, and working hard to create employment, job training opportunities, and promote economic development. More information at ahaak.org.
You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM Unalaska. It's Monday, March 10th, 2025, and I'm Taylor Heckert with some local news. There are no bears on most of the Aleutian Islands, at least not today. But a new study reveals that bears likely lived here thousands of years ago, solving a decades-long archaeological mystery. KUCB's Sophia Stewart-Rossi reports.
In the early 2000s, brown and polar bear bones were found at two historical dig sites on Unalaska and Mackinac Island. But these islands currently don't have bears, and there are no historical records of bears living there. So how did these bear bones get to these Aleutian Islands? Researchers recently discovered that polar bears and brown bears likely traveled to the central Aleutian Island region during the neoglacial climate phase, when sea ice was present in the region. According to carbon dating, the discovered polar bear bones are about 5,500 years old, and the brown bear bones are about 3,000 to 5,500 years old. The bear bones were found in historical dump sites used by Onunga people thousands of years ago. It's been theorized that the bears were transported from a neighboring island that has records of bears, but scientists now argue that likely wasn't the case for a number of reasons. The Onunga people have words to describe bears in Onungam Tenu, their native language. The Aleut dictionary provides terms for white bear in both Eastern and Western dialects, as well as ice bear and black bear. This indicates people in the region were familiar with different bear species. The study also adds that bear stories and legends have been recorded in the Aleutians. Another clue? The bones had butchery patterns, suggesting they were harvested locally. According to the study, bears historically were usually skinned and butchered immediately after death to avoid carcass decay and damage to the bear's skin and fur. Many of the bear bones that were found have cut marks showing signs of skinning, disarticulation, and meat removal. Researchers also found bones from cubs, which indicates female bears with their young were living nearby. The study says female bears with dependent cubs don't travel far. Scientists say further DNA research and ethnohistory are needed to better understand the ancient bear population that once inhabited Unalaska and a Mackinac Island thousands of years ago. In Unalaska, I'm Sophia Stewart Rossi.
Without a major boost in state education funding, Mount Edgecombe High School in Sitka is facing a likely 50% reduction in its teaching staff next year. Mount Edgecombe is one of Alaska's oldest boarding schools and has been serving students from across the state for almost 8 decades. The news about the prospective cutbacks was delivered to the school's advisory board late last month.
Travis Vaughn is a parent to Mount Edgecombe's class of 2024 valedictorian. Another child is a senior this year, also near the top of the class in academics, and a state contender in wrestling. Vaughn is the president of Mount Edgecombe's advisory board. He says board members weren't completely surprised when they were presented with the proposed budget for next year. Probably baffled is a better word.
Problem is we've made school funding so opaque in this country that nobody can understand it. That's the source of the real problem, and nobody wants to pay. I don't know what you do with half the teachers. How does that work?
The advisory board doesn't oversee Mount Edgecombe like a local school board. That's the job of the State Board of Education. Vaughn and his fellow advisory board members keep an eye on the things that make a school more than just a brick building with classrooms. Mount Edgecombe currently has 32 teachers for its 420 students. Rolling staff back to 15 or 17 positions, plus eliminating the competitive sports programs, is what Vaughn calls carnage. I asked him if he believed the school itself was in jeopardy.
So what's the point of a high school with no teachers, no sports, no cultural activities?
Will Mount Edgecombe close, conceivably?
I don't think so. I don't think that that's a realistic possibility. I don't think that the political powers that be, they probably understand that that is a disaster that they don't want to touch because we have alumni in every voting district in the state. And I don't think they really want to drive us off a cliff.
The problem is that Edgecombe, when you start cutting into the bone, you impact the program so significantly that you start to wonder if you can even have a school.
Sitka Representative Rebecca Himshute co-chairs the House Education Committee. She's introduced legislation to catch up state education funding with inflation over the next 3 years. The BSA, or base student allocation, hasn't significantly increased since 2016. Most school districts, like Sitka's, have been able to stay afloat by increasing class sizes and shifting some expenses onto local government. Himshute says Mount Edgecombe is more akin to the 19 rural schools in Alaska's regional education attendance areas, or REAAs, that are not supported by a local tax base.
And that puts them in an exceedingly difficult position because there is nowhere else to turn. And so that has helped to make the case for why a base student allocation increase is so desperately needed across the state. That's all those schools have.
Himmschutz's bill has broad support in the House, but her colleagues have already proposed substitute language limiting the BSA increase to $1,000 with a $450 reading incentive grant. That language could get the bill passed in the House, but the Senate is a different matter. Sitka Senator Bert Stedman co-chairs the Senate Finance Committee.
Frankly, we have significant deficit issues we're trying to deal with, and those big BSA numbers are probably not going to materialize.
Stedman managed to find some extra instructional funding for Mount Edgecombe last year. It's not clear to him how the school's situation could have become so dire in so short a time, with more or less the same number of students and same revenues as this year.
We'll have a conversation with the Department of Education, and which we do every year at Edgecombe, and take a look at it, but it doesn't seem to smell right to me.
Mount Edgecombe teachers first learned about some possible cuts last December, and they were reassured by the commissioner's office that Mount Edgecombe would stay open. But Matt Hunter, president of the union representing teachers, doesn't think it would be the same school if half of the teaching positions were eliminated.
Our students really thrive when they can have classes like art and music and electives. And if we don't have that, it'd be hard to attract kids. I mean, there's always efficiencies, but oftentimes they come with a cost that maybe isn't foreseen.
Hunter says Mount Edgecombe has an incredibly strong program and teaching team. He hopes there will be some reassurance from the legislature soon before his members begin looking for jobs elsewhere. In the meantime, Travis Vaughn says the advisory board supports the work of Mount Edgecombe's superintendent and the Department of Education, and he's not laying blame on the legislature or even on the governor. Nevertheless, he remains frustrated with state education funding. He sees it as a shell game, and he wouldn't mind if Alaskans were more upset about it.
People need to organize on their own and start demanding this money. Because for our government to tell teachers, cops, and firefighters that there's no money is just a lie.
Having once managed large government contracts for the Army, Vaughn is wary of the word salad that accompanies the state education budget. It's a magician's trick, he says, to distract you while the man in the black hat walks out the back door with all the money. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
There's a nearly 50-50 chance that the Alaska Permanent Fund won't have enough spendable money to pay dividends and the state bills at least once over the next decade. That is, unless lawmakers change the structure of the fund to function more like a university endowment. That's the key takeaway from a presentation Permanent Fund leaders and the legislature's chief budget analyst gave to lawmakers last week. Permanent Fund Corporation CEO Devin Mitchell told lawmakers on Tuesday that the issue is not with the $80-plus billion permanent fund itself. Mitchell says the problem is with the fund's two-account structure.
We want to ensure that there's an ability to provide a payment to the state of Alaska each and every year. We don't want to have a 46% probability of failure. We don't want to have any probability of failure for this revenue stream at this point.
The permanent fund is separated into two accounts. There's the nearly $60 billion so-called principal, which can't be spent without a vote of the people. And then there's the so-called earnings reserve account, which has about $9 billion in spendable money. Legislators could spend every last dollar of that by a simple majority vote. Now, lawmakers are considering a constitutional amendment that would combine the two accounts into one. Legislative budget analysts say that would solve the problem. The amendment would also constitutionally cap the draw at 5%. Creating what the Permanent Fund Board Chair describes as, quote, predictability and sustainability for the fund going forward. Senator Bert Stedman, a Sitka Republican, says the amendment would also prevent lawmakers from spending billions of dollars from the fund when they face a deficit.
The little piggies in the trough are getting hungry in this building, so let's not, you know, overlook the benefit of the endowment concept in restricting the ability of appropriations over if it's a 5% or 4.5%, whatever we set that limit at.
The Permanent Funds Board has been pushing to combine the accounts for decades. Last year, they published a rare analysis paper illustrating the importance of the concept. Combining the accounts and capping the draw is broadly popular among senators in both the largely Democratic majority and the all-Republican minority. though there is some debate about whether 5% is the right amount to draw every year. Placing a constitutional amendment on the ballot for voters takes a two-thirds majority in the House and Senate. The governor would not be able to veto it. Snow and strong winds are expected for the eastern Aleutians for the next couple of days. The National Weather Service says periods of snow showers and strong westerly winds gusting up to 60 miles per hour are likely for the eastern Aleutians through Tuesday. The southern Alaska Peninsula can expect gusts of up to 50 miles per hour. The strong winds and falling snow could reduce visibility. The greatest chance of that will be this afternoon for the eastern Aleutians and the evening for the Alaska Peninsula. Headlights are required when visibility drops below 1,000 feet. Let's take a look at KUCB's community calendar for the week. This week is spring break for Unalaska City School District students. Enjoy your vacation. The Unalaska City Council meets tomorrow evening. This meeting starts at 6 o'clock. Agenda items and documents can be found on the city's website. This Wednesday, the Museum of the Aleutians is hosting a volunteer day to help with various projects, including digitization, education program preparation, and collections care. Volunteer day lasts from noon to 4:30. The Polar Bear 5K run has been rescheduled to this Saturday, March 15th. The course is a scenic route from the community center towards Summer Bay and back. Check-in is at 1 and the race starts at 1:30. Also on Saturday is the Youth Swim League meet at the Unalaska Aquatic Center. That starts at 10 o'clock Saturday morning. Unalaska's health clinic is hosting two life-saving trainings on Saturday as well. Community members are invited to learn how to control bleeding and recognize life-threatening injuries at the Stop the Bleed trainings led by Alulik Family and Health Services clinical staff. The first group meets from 9 to 11 Saturday morning. The second session will begin at 11:30. More registration information can be found on the community calendar. For more information on all of these community events and more, head to our community calendar at kucb.org. That's the news from Unalaska. I'm Taylor Heckert, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org. And please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.
It's time now for your community window here on KSDP. Starting with job openings, the QT Tribe of Sandpoint is looking for a grant writer, an executive director, and an environmental assistant. The Shimigan Corporation of Sandpoint is hiring a housekeeper and a bartender. The Belkoski Tribe of King Cove is looking for a part-time IGAP assistant and a full-time Belkoski Environmental Program assistant. EATS is hiring a behavioral health trainee and a community health representative. Both of those positions can be in Sandpoint or King Cove. They're also hiring a community health aide for Falls Pass and Nelson Lagoon, a clinical information clerk for King Cove, and a clinical information clerk slash janitor for Cold Bay. Community announcements. Once again, congratulations on wrapping up your basketball season to the Rookies, Eagles, and Lady Eagles, and best of luck representing the Aleutian Chain Conference to the King Cove T-Jacks, who are advancing to state. And today is March 4th, 2025. Happy birthday to Shirley Smith. And that's all for the community window. If you have anything you'd like for us to put on the air or web, you can contact us through email at cw@apradio.org. You can call us at 907-383-5737, or you can still fax us at 907-383-5271. Also, look for updates, meeting archives, and more at apradio.org. I'm Amy Mack. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
Funding for KSDP is made possible in part by the King Cove Corporation, operating the Fleets, Inn Hotel, the Heart Lakes Apartments, and the Last Hook Off Tavern. The King Cove Corporation is a proud sponsor of KSDP.
Okay, here's a song about an Irishman who had a little bad luck. And I've been told this is a true story. Dear sir, I write this note to you to tell you of me plight. For at the time of writing, I am not a pretty sight. Me body is all black and blue, me face a deathly gray. And I write this note to tell you why I'm not at work today. While working on the 14th floor, some bricks I had to clear. But to toss them down from such a height was not a good idea. The foreman wasn't very pleased, he is an awkward sod. He said I'd have to cart them down the ladders in me hot. Now shifting all those bricks by hand, it was so very slow. So I hoisted up a barrel and secured a rope below. But in me haste to do the job, I was too blind to see that a barrel full of building bricks is heavier than me. And so when I untied the rope, the barrel fell like lead. And clinging tightly to the rope, I started up instead. I shot up like a rocket till to my dismay I found that halfway up I met the bloody barrel coming down. Now the barrel broke me shoulder as to the ground it sped. And when I reached the top, I banged the pulley with me head. I clung on tightly, numb with shock from this almighty blow. And the barrel spilled out half the bricks 14 floors below. Now when these bricks had fallen from the barrel to the floor, I then outweighed the barrel and so started down once more. Still clinging tightly to the rope, me body racked with pain. Halfway down I met the bloody barrel once again. Now the force of this collision halfway down the office block caused multiple contusions and a nasty state of shock. Still clinging tightly to the rope, I fell toward the ground and landed on the broken bricks the barrel had scattered round. Well, I lay there groaning on the ground, I thought I'd passed the worst. But the barrel hit the pulley wheel and then the bottom burst. A shower of bricks rained down on me, I didn't have a hope. For as I lay there bleeding, I let go the bloody rope. The barrel being unsecured then started down once more. And it landed right across me as I lay there on the floor. It broke three ribs and my left arm, and I can only say that I hope you'll understand why Murphy's not at work today.
Gonna make sweet. Got something winking.
Nobody else. You're tuned in Sandpoint to 8:30 a.m. KSDP, 91.9 FM KAEB in Sandpoint, also K201DA in King Cove, Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you.